You're listening to We're Only Human, hosted by Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We're Only Human focuses and highlights how modern technology and new ways of working are creating a more people-centric workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.h3hr.com.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ben Eubanks. Welcome to the We're Only Human podcast, where we explore the intersection of people, technology, and the workplace. We are enjoying our summer here as it winds down with the kids and just having a good time trying to stay cool in the Alabama heat. We're actually about to celebrate the birthday of our oldest, soon-to-be 7-year-old twins, Bella and Bree, which is really hard to believe. We just actually finished up a research project on the business value of HR technology, and I had some data in there from outside HR as well to validate. And what I mean is I actually surveyed several hundred business leaders outside the HR profession, got their input on how HR tech adds value or doesn't add value to the business. And it was really interesting because the business leaders outside HR said that HR tech was a strategic tool more often than those inside the HR function. And of course, that could be kind of a podcast all in itself, but I wanted to let everybody know that since I'll be publishing some of the work on that in the next week or two, just keep an eye out if you're interested in seeing some of that research around the business value of HR technology. I also mention it, of course, because it's kind of a perfect fit for the topic today. I'm talking with Mary Isla Ward. She's an IO psychologist and a consultant, and we're going to discuss how to determine the value, the ROI of the work that we do in the HR profession. As always, it's a fun conversation. We get deep into some of the methods for tracking and understanding the value that HR brings to the business. And it's just going to be a really, really fun conversation. Again, if you want to be a business leader, if you want to, you know, own your space, have some credibility, you have to understand these kinds of concepts. You're going to get left behind. You're going to be one of the traditional HR people, as put in air quotes, traditional HR people with the role of compliance, control, complaint, whatever you want to use the C word there, but there's no value in that really. So really it's going to be a good conversation to help you understand some of the ways we can calculate the value we bring to the business. Because again, I'd argue that all of us do bring value in some way. We're just not good at tracking it. So I hope you enjoy it. Now on with the show.
Well, greetings everybody. This is Ben Eubanks, host of We're Only Human, and I'm really glad to have you back with us. Today, I'm really, really excited to bring you some great insights from my good friend, Mary Isla Ward. She's the owner of Horizon Point Consulting. She's a speaker, a writer, a mom, a runner, and an all-around great person. Mary Isla, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ben. Excited to be here.
Excellent. I'm pumped. I was just telling you a few minutes ago that I've had a couple times where I've been able to kind of see you speak and present, and actually the topic we're going to talk about today, you've done it twice locally, and I haven't been able to see you yet. So I'm really, really excited to hear about some of those things. But before we get to that, let everybody get to know you a little bit better. Tell us something that, you know, everybody's going to Google you, find out about you. We'll give them a chance at the end to connect with you wherever you'd like them to, email, social. But tell us something that someone couldn't find out about you, maybe in a quick Google search.
Sure. So the funny thing about this is that I'm pretty boring. And so I sent this to my husband and said, what's something about me that people wouldn't know and couldn't find on the internet? And his response to me is, well, you're really boring. but he did say, and he said, to that point, you know, you go to bed at 9 o'clock or before almost every night. And so I guess something that people wouldn't know is that I like my rest. A lot of entrepreneurs and people like me, I think, turn on when it gets dark. I turn off when it gets dark. So I enjoy a productive work day, but if you need me or need me to think after about 7 or 8, I'm not your girl. But love having time with family in the evenings and then going to bed about when my 6 and 3-year-old do.
I knew you had the little ones. I couldn't remember if you had two. I thought so. And yeah, I'm the same way. I don't know. After everything, again, I did list like 5 things that you do. So, I mean, it's probably justifiable that you're ready to be conked out at 9 o'clock because I'm the very same way. I know if I crack open my laptop or respond to an email after about 8 o'clock, I can't turn my brain off for another hour. So it's
right.
floating around there, and I just can't rest, can't sleep. So I'm very religious about, okay, cutting it off at this point. You know, when we put the kids to bed, I'm reading a book, something fun or mindless, and just, you know, zoning out because I can't handle that. So, you know what? And thank goodness that your husband was very honest with you. That's always a good thing to have, right?
Yes, I was interested to see what he was going to come back with, and so it's always fun to see how other people see you.
I'm going to have to go and ask Melanie that after we finish this conversation and figure out and share it maybe next time, because that'll be, I'm sure everybody else is dying to know that about me. So I didn't tell you this ahead of time, but one of the reasons – so today we're going to talk about ROI and measurement and all the other good stuff, but – last year, I set out on a mission, a personal, like, agenda. I wanted to learn how to calculate ROI, and I wanted to do it in real, true terms, not just fuzzy, general, you know, this is a good, this are bad, but how
right.
to actually measure that stuff. And so I actually dedicated half an hour every day for a couple weeks. I was reading everything I'd find. I was writing, you know, kind of consolidating
right.
some of those things I was learning, and then capturing those things and then practicing on a couple examples and stuff so I could really wrap my mind around it. You know, one reason is because I had to present on the topic too, so I wanted to
right.
make sure I was kind of squared away. But also, I was like, you know, I've talked about this for a long time. I write about it a lot. But again, it's that fuzzy, you know, yes or no, or using some perception data but not actual hard numbers about this stuff. So it was challenging, but also rewarding. And so we're going to
right.
talk about some of those rewards, some of the challenges today. So that's kind of why I'm interested in the topic. But what about you? You know, I know you have a general passion for measurement, your IOPsych background and other stuff. You know, you're generally curious about that. But is it that? Is it a desire to add value for your clients? I'm just kind of curious about what about measurement kind of pulls you in?
Sure. Well, obviously, my education has instilled that in me. I was in graduate school. I was drilled that I am and my colleagues are scientist practitioners. Hmm. So that we test, we hypothesize, we put data to problems, and then we actually practice and apply that. So that was really probably the beginning of my mindset on we need to measure and we need to measure what matters and see if it matters. But having been in the consulting business for about 6 years, it's made me really realize that it's a way for us as consultants to distinguish ourselves in the market. When it comes to HR and talent management and development consulting, there aren't a lot of people, even though there's so much talk now in the industry about data and analytics, that are working with companies that the size that we do, which are typically growing but smaller companies, putting out data or looking at numbers and data to justify decisions or to help notice trends or make decisions. Most of it is anecdotal, and most of it is, oh, this sounds good, so we think this works. So it's been another way for us to distinguish ourselves in the industry by measuring things for our clients and then helping them make better decisions and ultimately help them grow and help them make money.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's offend somebody right off the bat.
Sure.
Answer a question for me. And, well, maybe we don't have to be afraid of offending because we're from the South. We can say, bless your heart. It'll be okay. And we'll smooth it over.
Right.
But how would you rate the average HR person in terms of measurement maturity, I guess, with things like ROI or using evidence? If you had to go from 1 to 10, where would you say the average person kind of falls in HR?
That's a great question. I think I would probably say below the midpoint. Probably a 4, maybe.
Okay.
And there's a couple of reasons for that. One, HR by nature is dealing with people, and people are fuzzy. People aren't, you know, behaviors aren't black and white often. You know, when you talk to someone who's in finance or accounting in a business, well, that world is black and white. So I think that it's part of it maybe is not our fault. We are dealing with people, and people are not perfect, and people cannot oftentimes be drilled down to a number. So I think that's one challenge. I think the other challenge is that our field in terms of education and focus has not been based as much as other fields on measurement. And also, a lot of the people that are in our field are drawn to people, not to numbers. So it's kind of it's a double whammy there. But I do think that people are realizing in our field that measuring and measuring what matters and calculating things like ROI actually lead to more legitimacy across the business units for themselves, and also help them to be better people practitioners because they can help people more when they look at the numbers and make decisions based off them.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you have people coming to you, not just for, okay, what's our headcount, but, you know, tell us something that is going to help us predict what's next, or do you have any leading information about one of the presentations I've done lately is around engagement. And I talk about engagement is not important in its own right. You know, who cares
right.
if that number goes up, you know, by 1 point or 2 points. But if we can connect that to something like revenue or something like customer satisfaction and say, hey,
right.
you know what, we've noticed that for every point increase in our engagement in this, you know, customer service group, customer satisfaction is going up 5%. Well, hey, that becomes a leading indicator then. You get to understand where that's going based on how you're treating your people, and then it
right.
really is something that people are coming to you saying, okay, do you have any updates? What's changed? Has anything, you know, been different? What can we do to improve this? Because we see the result that matters. You know, it's not just this general, again, fuzzy kind of term that doesn't really relate to people. The actual title of the session is Why Your CEO Doesn't Care About Engagement. And it's, again, it gets
right.
back to that. Let's get some real metrics that matter. And going back to your comment, I'd say 4 might be even a little bit generous. I'd be a little bit more hardcore on my brethren. And again, I've been there. I've been bad at this too. So I'm not just pointing fingers. I'm saying, hey, I've not been good at this as well. You know, just measuring headcount or just, you know, calculating turnover numbers isn't the same thing as being able to prove the value of something or disprove
right.
this path we've been on for some period of time. You know, don't tell me what your gut says. Tell me what the evidence says. Where's the data? Where's the proof? And you said the word a minute ago, credibility. And that's what it all really comes down to for me.
Right. Well, when you're talking to your CFO or your CEO, in other disciplines, they have been geared towards looking at numbers to make decisions. And so it's important to be able to provide those numbers. And I think oftentimes our gut can lead us to what we think we need to measure, and then to try to determine whether or not that measurement does matter. But we need to have those numbers so that people understand and are better equipped to know what to do because of those numbers.
Excellent. And so I want to take some time and dig into these case studies that you kind of covered in your recent presentation, because I think they're good good examples to kind of help us wrap our mind around this a little bit. But one last thing before we get into this, because it's something that, again, going back to that like self-imposed learning project where I was trying to grasp this really well, one of the things that I got from that was a quote, and I don't remember it word for word, but basically the point was ROI is not a performance indicator, whether you're in HR or any other profession. It's not a performance indicator. It's a business
right.
improvement tool. It's a process
right.
improvement tool. And too often people say, you know, I'm reluctant to measure that because it's going to show that what I'm doing isn't important or isn't valuable, or maybe this thing, you know, we've just been throwing money at this and nothing's changed or nothing's improved. In reality, it'd be better to know that than not, right? And
right.
I actually had a conversation with a vendor last year in the they sell a product that focuses on employee communications as their kind of their core area,
mm-hmm.
and they have a tool in the back end where you can see your campaigns you're sending out to your employees. You can see which ones are being opened, which ones are being shared by employees, how much of the videos they're consuming, and things like that. You get some good data on what they're doing with that communication.
Right.
And the guy said, you know, we're talking about this concept of measurement. I'm like, that's really neat. He said, you know what? There are some people, some prospects that say, can we turn that off? Can we hide that functionality? Because we don't want our boss to see whether this is working or not. We don't want to be, you know, that's kind of scary for us. I'm like, wouldn't you
right.
rather know, hey, we're we're spending 80% of our time doing these things that actually don't add value, but this 20% over here is what everyone's consuming, everyone's sharing, everyone is, you know, it's really driving those key behaviors for employees. Wouldn't it be more valuable to know that so you can put more time and effort and resources behind the things that are working?
Right.
And he's like, we tried to have that conversation with them. They still wanted it. And we ultimately, you know, said, you might want to find another vendor because we're not going to back away from those things because we think those are really important for you.
Right.
And we're going to hold you to it. And so I thought
that was
good for them. But at the same time, it was like, I'm like, my heart hurts for the people that are thinking, let's not measure because we're afraid of what it's going to tell us.
Right. And sometimes you find out that what you're measuring doesn't matter. And so I think the first step, and it kind of is a lead in to the first case study that I provided, is you've got to figure out what measurements matter. And I think oftentimes a good way to do that is a measurement and calculation called regression. So regression basically helps people to understand, is there a relationship here? So if does A predict B, or does B predict A, or does it not predict either, or do A and B together predict C? So, you know, regression, for anyone who has had statistics and may cringe at the thought of doing that, the interesting thing about all you have to do is have those data points and then plug it in Excel, and Excel will do the calculating for you. But with that being said, with the case that we identified in the presentation you're referencing, we have a retail client who knew that their people practices were not helping contribute to their success. So they brought us in and said, we need help, but we don't know what we need help with. And obviously their ultimate goal was to increase sales, to grow revenue and grow profitability. And so when we started working with them, we said, okay, well, what are those things that are related to or can help us predict revenue that are people related? So, of course, things like store location, competitors in the marketplace that are close to them, obviously impact revenue. But what are those people things that do? And so we got a list of about 6 to 8 different things that we thought might be related to revenue. Everything from the average age of the employee in a store to tenure to turnover, which those are kind of related, but they are different measurements, to engagement scores, employee satisfaction scores. And so what we did is we just ran those numbers and said, is A related to B? And we found out that some of the things that we thought were not. But we found out that the average tenure per store was correlated with revenue. It was a predictor of revenue. And employee satisfaction was also. They do an annual engagement type survey, and it was actually the best predictor of revenue. So those are the two things we measure. We don't measure anything else for them, and we obviously tie it to revenue. And we then are making decisions about what people interventions we need to make, such as management training is a key, onboarding is a key, and then we're going to continue as we implement these things to watch these key indicators and see if the projects that we've implemented and the changes that we've implemented in their people practices are actually then turning around and producing ROI. What did it cost me to do these things? Did it actually lead to benefit? Did my investment in these things lead to a positive outcome in terms of ROI?
That's excellent. And what's fun is you can even dig deeper into any of those things, the actual employee satisfaction piece, and figure out, you know, there's all kinds of drivers for that, right? And like you're saying,
exactly.
Whether it's onboarding, it's manager training. I think it was Kelly Services, their research said that 70% of an employee's satisfaction depends on their direct manager. They
exactly.
have a huge influence to sway to the positive or the negative how that employee perceives their job. And so, yeah, I love the case study. And I meant to say this before you even jumped in, but – the reason that I love case studies and stories like these is, you know, if you walked up to any HR pro at a meeting and said, hey, is data and measurement important? They said, yeah, you know, it certainly is. Okay, you know, but what now?
Right.
You kind of get that blank stare. And so
exactly.
The specific reason I ask you to talk through some of these stories is because it gives them an example, an idea of what this looks like in practice. It's not just this general vague, you know, go do that ROI thing. Just like my own little personal path I talked about a little bit ago, it wasn't just a general learning experience. I wanted to put it into practice and put these things on paper and understand how they actually work. And so, again, I love the first example. It's a great story. And to be able to kind of connect those things in, I just love it. It's awesome. So what's number two on the list?
So number two actually combines a regression to then make a decision where we are now have the ROI data. So with the previous client in the manufacturing sector, their problem that they came to us about was turnover. And like you said, a lot of people gather those numbers like turnover or headcount or whatever it may be, but then they're like, now what? So we looked at several of their people practices and felt like one of the key things that was leading to a less than desirable turnover rate was their selection process. So when we look at that, you know, a lot of things contribute to turnover, but we felt like honing in on that was going to make the most difference with that. So we looked at high performers that they had already on staff and low performers through job analysis and compared those and then came up with key competencies that were leading to success. And then we went to the market and shopped a pre-screening assessment to say, okay, what tools are out there for us to predict or to measure these competencies that we know are important or we think are important, and I'll tell you in just a minute how we found out that we knew they were important, and then use that as a screening tool to make better hires. So we narrowed it down to one assessment and then began to say, okay, let's test our current workforce, their current workforce on this assessment and see if it is predicting anything important. So one of the things that they had been measuring but had been doing really nothing about other than to make termination decisions was what they called an attendance time bank. So, you know, if you were late or if you called out unexpectedly or, you know, were just not in attendance for a reason other than something that was planned or a sick or emergency, then you would obviously be deducted from that time bank. So we, again, ran a regression based on the points that we saw with their current workforce and those that took this assessment based on the competence we pulled together and looked at, does it correlate at all with attendance time bank? And with that, we found out, yes, it did, especially one particular measure of initiative and effort on that screening was a predictor of attendance and time bank. So that's what we honed in on. Again, we had to first get to measuring what matters and knowing that that pre-screen assessment was going to make an impact in helping them make better hires. And so we put that in place along with some other tweaks to their selection process that made it more standardized and also included manager training on how to interview effectively. Within a year, their turnover decreased by 50%. And then we were able to put calculations to what does turnover cost us. So when you look at the research out there and the data, you'll see that most people will say that turnover costs a company anywhere from 100 to 300% of the person's annual salary. These were production-type positions, so of course we took the lowest number, that 100%, and then calculated how many people obviously have the difference in their turnover rate and found out that in 1 year alone, they saved about $1.5 million in turnover costs. So you obviously see from that it was a good decision, but was it a good decision? Because obviously the assessment costs something, mm-hmm. and our consulting costs something. So that's where the ROI calculation comes in. It looks great, but did it actually lead to a positive investment? And that's where you take that cost and that benefit and cost and subtract those out and then divide it by the cost and multiply it by 100. And you end up seeing that within this case, for every $1 they spent or invested in our fees and in assessment expenses led to about $83 in return for them in making those changes and adjustments. So kind of a lengthy process to talk someone through, but hopefully that gives everyone an idea of how we first figure out and measure what matters, and then we use that to make decisions that then leads us to be able to say what's the return on our investment.
Yeah, and think about how many people stop with that. Even if they get to that point where they say, hey, our turnover decreased by X and we're happy and we're going to move on, and they never stop to figure out, you know, was it worthwhile? Should we do that again? You know, could we get even more out of this? You know, some of the other questions that you could answer by doing that further ROI, you know, drill down and trying to examine that. You know, it seems like they're missing the real opportunity by just focusing on that surface level. Okay, here's what happened. Because I know, you know, it's easy to fall into that kind of trap of, you know, this is the headline. You know, this is really important.
Right.
But again, even netting out, trying to sort out what the investment was and then getting to the actual value of it. Because there are some things, you know, you're talking about, I think the last one talked about training. You're going to talk about it a little bit. But there are some things where it's not clear, hey, if the investment or if the ROI is positive, you know, for every dollar we put in, we get $10 of value. What happens if we put in $100? Do we get, you know,
right?
Do we continue seeing that same trend? Because if so, you should flood that thing with as much resources
right.
as you can put into it. But there are other times where it might not make sense to, you know, it's diminishing returns or whatever else.
Right.
You know, you can't continue to do that. So again, that's one thing that I want to encourage people, because there are so many that would stop at that point and say, we did this, turnover decreased. That's a good thing. Again, anecdotally, we know that's a good thing. We just don't know what the value of it is. And then moving
right.
on from there, that's such a common thing. And it's still they're leaving the real value on the table when they do that.
Right. Well, I think is, you know, the business world operates based on dollars and cents. So we can measure stuff that we know is good, but if we're going to be viable business partners, we need to translate our results into the business language. And like it or not, the language of business is money. And so when you can translate that into a dollar figure, it resonates more across the business.
Absolutely. I need to put that on a banner and just have it fly around over the SHRM conference next week. So that
right.
I'm being hard on people, but again, it's I've been there too, so I've been bad at it, and I want to be good at it, and I want everybody else to be as well. By the way, you mentioned this a minute ago. So we're talking about math, which is always hard on a podcast. I'm going to give you a chance at the very end to tell people how they can get in touch with you if they want a copy of those slides, because I've seen them. You give a really good outline of all this. You put the actual numbers in there so they can see the calculations and other fun stuff. So that if they're curious about, okay, I want to try this myself, or you know, maybe we did something that changed turnover recently, and I'm trying to calculate if there's an ROI on that and things. So to give them those actual notes, I'll make sure at the very end we'll get a link to those in the show notes, or we'll get a link to, you know, to your website, however you want to put them in touch with you. But before we get too far away, let's talk about number three, because I think that's another good example.
Right. And so number three is actually not based on a client that we have had, but actually research that a colleague of ours that we partnered with before and enjoy working with, Dr. Denny Smith. He is with Calhoun Community College in the area, obviously, that we both live in. And for his doctoral dissertation, he did research related to ROI with training, in particularly looking at the difference potentially in ROI based on in-person training and web-based training. So it was interesting when I brought this topic up, when I shared it with the group earlier this week, there was a lot of commentary, whether they were addressing it to the entire group or just to their neighbor, about the like or dislike of online or web-based learning. And so, you know, we sometimes we can look at stuff anecdotally and say, oh, there's no way that online training produces as much ROI or as much benefit as in-person training, or vice versa. I think people can argue both ways. And so it's interesting to see that already preconceived notion that a lot of people had about that. And the overall consensus, at least of this group, was in-person training most likely leads to more ROI. So with Denny doing this research, he looked at basically a defense contractor in this area, a large group of engineers participating in web-based training. And the results were that the ROI of the web-based training was higher than the ROI of non-web-based training. So interesting to see that the benefit that web-based training brought of, you know, on-demand, they could watch it at any time, they could watch it in different chunks or clips. I mentioned I'm not an evening person, but someone – so I could watch it in the morning. Ben, if you're a night owl, which I don't think you are either, like you said, but if my husband's a night owl, he wants to watch it at 10 o'clock at night, he can. And it actually led to better ROI. And so by about $2 when you look at that. So the ROI of non-web-based training was about every dollar spent was produced about $17 in benefit. And then for the web-based, it was about $19 for every $1 spent. The investment led to about $19 in results. So always interesting to use this stuff to test a hypothesis, like I mentioned, be an experimenter and see if your assumptions are right or wrong. Oftentimes they are. We just need to put the numbers to it. And sometimes they're not. And when we realize they're not, it can help us make better decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny to think that the kind of and the perceptions that we hold and how sometimes those are completely wrong. Just because for whatever reason, it's either an innate thing, we think we know the world, or someone else has told us this, or we've seen it work one way, so we think that's the only way it works. Did a study a couple years ago on training methods and said, you know, what's the most effective way, the most effective method for training someone? And far and away, instructor-led, you know, training was the number one thing. Behind that came on the job, social and collaborative, and mentoring. Those are the first four, top four.
Right, right.
But when I took the data and I broke it out by, took the people out of the mix that were not using those three, those other three that were not instructor led,
right.
When I pulled those people out of the batch, the others actually moved ahead of instructor led in terms of perceived effectiveness. And so that was one
right.
of the things, again, we're like at service level, we're like, okay, yeah, if I just looked at this and then walked away, I would think that instructor-led is the most important. But it's only the most important because a lot of those companies were not using these other tools. For the ones who were using other methods
sure.
of learning and growth, they said, these exceed that because, again, we're not pulling people away from the job. We're doing things informally and all the other benefits of those kinds of relationships, you know, informal learning versus just that formal, structured, stick you in a classroom and hope for the best kind of thing. So,
sure.
Yeah, that's
well,
really.
Well, you know, we need to be able to be consumers of research and data that then can help us make best decisions. But we also, like you mentioned, need to put that in context, and in the context of our environment, our client's environment, or whatever it may be, and make sure that that is the case based on what we saw in research in maybe another sector or in another context.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's when I presented on this last year, I talked a lot about evidence-based HR and really taking the approach that I'm not going to present a solution that is, you know, Bob's idea or this worked at Sue's last company and, you know, they didn't fail, so it's probably going to work here, like, or go with your gut. Like, all those things are very common ways to make decisions. Think about the last couple decisions that, you know, most companies made were probably made with one of those things. And
sure.
There is more than likely, again, today we have a wealth of information available to us. It's not hard to do a quick study. You know, I've been writing a lot of research lately where I'm out there trying to find other sources to back up things and to validate some of the stuff that I've found. And it's not hard to find some good research that will that will either validate the kind of thing you're trying to do and say, you know, here's what you can expect or here's the value of it, or again, in some cases, it may completely invalidate it. And again, you'd rather know that before you go too far down that path. Like, hey,
sure,
the last three companies that tried this have failed. I can't remember the numbers behind it, but the example I used in the presentation, you know, a state had put in this paper performance system for teachers and said, you know, we're going to give them, you know, X thousands of dollars a year based on, you know, test scores and so on.
Right.
And they canceled it after spending millions and millions of dollars, you know, 2-3 years later. And there was actually a study released 2-3 years before they started their program that said, hey, this has been tried. It doesn't work. But they still went ahead, poured those millions of dollars into the program, and then canceled it ultimately. But again, one of those examples where they just, a little bit of research, a little bit of looking around, they could have found that information before they you know, broke the bank and tried to pursue something that had already been proven to fail.
Right. Well, and that's the scientist practitioner approach. Like I mentioned, I had to write a thesis for my master's degree. And of course, the first step in that process is what we call a literature review. So you're looking at all the past research that's related to your topic to then be able to make a good decision about what you want to test, how you want to test it, and what your hypothesis is. And then you can use that, you know, use the past to make good decisions, and then use the data to make good decisions in the future.
Absolutely. This has been really, really good stuff. Just a great conversation, and I could do this like all day, you know, throw an example back and forth. And we're both kind of nerds in that way, in the most positive way possible.
Right.
So before we go, I want to make sure that you didn't have any other questions. Sorry, not questions. Any closing comments or anything else like to hammer this home before we give everybody a chance to get in touch with you?
Sure. Well, I first just want to thank you for the opportunity to spend some time talking with you about something that I'm passionate about. And then also just want to send a word of encouragement to all of our colleagues out there. You know, what we are doing is very important work. It is helping to lead to satisfaction in the workplace. And I think that's such a critical component of overall satisfaction, joy, happiness, whatever you want to call it, in life. So what we're doing matters to people, and people are the most important thing. So thanks to all of you who are listening for doing what you're doing. And I hope that what Ben and I have talked about today can be helpful in you moving forward to continue to make an impact.
Excellent. Very well said. And hey, this has been definitely my honor, my joy to have you on here. I've been making notes as you've been sharing, again, because you're just a wealth of information. So if someone else wants to get in touch with you, whether just to learn more about what you do or to, you know, get a copy of the work, the slides or anything else, how can they reach out to you?
Sure. Well, generally and broadly, our website is horizonpointconsulting.com, so feel free to take a look at it and browse and peruse. My contact information is on the website, but for easier access and sharing today, the easiest place to really connect with me is just via email. Of course, I'm on Twitter, LinkedIn, all of those things. My name is spelled interestingly, so that's important. It's Mary and then Isla, I-L-A, it's two words, it's a double name, and then my last name is Ward, W-A-R-D. So that's my Twitter handle, and you can look me up on LinkedIn there. But then my email address is just simply my initials, MIW@horizonpointconsulting.com. So give me a shout via email if you want any of the materials or content from today. I'd be happy to share those with you. Also, related to not only the slides that I have some links with YouTube videos that give you the step-by-step instructions for how to use tools like Excel to calculate all of these things. So if I can be a benefit and send in those to you, I'd be more than happy to.
Excellent. Excellent. Thank you so much, Mary. That's great. And I know that again, everybody else probably appreciated the conversation as well today. It's just been a lot of fun catching up with you and learning a little bit from you as well. And again, this is a topic that you and I both feel very passionate about, because we know that there's an opportunity for growth. There's an opportunity for people to do a little better. So everybody else out there, thank you again for listening in today. This has been Eubanks, host We're Only Human, and we'll catch you next time.
Thanks for listening to We're Only Human with Ben Eubanks on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. To learn more and to listen to the show archives for We're Only Human and all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows, go to www.h3hr.com. And remember to subscribe to the HR Happy Hour Network podcasts on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or your favorite podcast player app.